Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Fuck the front line, bitch.
Any of you fucking pricks move, and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you.
It's showtime, folks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Cinema Flare podcast here on cinemaflare.com. And wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast, whether it's on anchor.fm, which I should get a .fm. I like that. Cinemaflare.fm. That would be great. Or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or whatnot. On this episode of the Cinema Flare podcast, we're going to be going back in time to the 80s like we usually do when we have this round table. On the episode, special guests, good close personal friends of mine, we have one of the co-hosts of Two Guys Drinking and the Beer History Podcast, the DA. What's up, DA?
Hey, what's going on, pal?
And also joining us here tonight, we have got the man himself, the living legend, the Bold One, the host of Bold One Movie Reviews. We have got Jeffrey. What's up, Jeff?
Oh, it's great. Great to be here chatting it up with you again.
Hell yeah, man. We had a good time last time that all three of us got together talking about best of the best. And on this episode here, we are going to go back in time to 1986, 3 years before Best of the Best came out, and we're going to stick with the theme of martial arts. We're going to talk about No Retreat, No Surrender. It sounds like a Vince McMahon pay-per-view, doesn't it?
Yeah. Get you amped up there, you know?
Yeah. No Retreat, No Surrender, 1986 American martial arts film directed by Corey Yin. I hope I pronounced his name right. In his American directorial debut, the movie stars Kurt McKinney and Jean-Claude Van Damme. The film was released in the United States on May 2nd, 1986. This was before the DA was born.
Pal.
McKinney performs as Jason Stillwell, an American teenager who learns martial arts from the spirit of Bruce Lee. Stillwell uses these lessons to defend his martial arts dojo against the Soviet martial artist Ivan Krasinski. It's the first film in the No Retreat, No Surrender franchise. Can you believe that?
Wait, there's a franchise?
Yes, this movie's a franchise.
There's two movies. Yeah, it's a trilogy.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I have not seen the second or third one. I've only seen the first one.
I think the second one has Cynthia Rothrock.
Who?
Female martial artist in the movies.
Okay.
Back in the '80s. Yeah, she did movies like China O'Brien and Undefeatable. And No Retreat, No Surrender too. But yeah, look her up. I mean, good God, she was like one of the first female like action stars. Martial artist in film.
Yeah. Okay. I know the DA will look her up. You mentioned a female's name. He's looking her up.
Oh, please do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I will too. Up and down. Going back, the film, it was written by Keith W. Strandberg after being contracted by Wu Xin Yen. Hope I pronounced his name
there.
Right.
So you were going to say he got conned into writing this horrible movie.
He got a little bit of information here. Okay. This guy that was contracted, the owner of Seasonal Film Corporation, he wanted him to write the film despite have never written a script before.
And it shows.
It does.
It does.
Very much. And DA, I know you're going to love this next little tidbit here, bro. Jean-Claude Van Damme was cast in the film and caused problems on set for continually physically contacting other actors and stuntmen during the fight scenes, even after he was told not to.
Oh, this isn't the first time he's done that.
Oh, I'm sure not.
Why is he such a dick? Why is he stiffing everybody?
Jean-Claude Van Dick.
Oh, him and Steven Seagal. Yeah, they were the freaking worst.
Steven Seagal, that fucking Russian.
Don't encourage Jeff. Don't get him started on Seagal, bro. That's a whole hour podcast right there.
Oh yeah, let's save that for another podcast.
We should dedicate a whole podcast down the road to Steven fucking Seagal.
Yeah, about the positive part of him.
Like, well, then it'll be like a 5-minute podcast.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is there positive things about him?
Yeah.
Positively runs like a girl.
Yeah, he does have an interesting run with his fucking, like, he doesn't even like make a fist like everybody does when they run. His fucking hands are all flat out and shit.
Hey, Van Damme will destroy him in a real fight.
You know, there's only one Steven Seagal movie. All right, Under Siege was okay, but my all time favorite, the only one I could probably watch all the way through, is Hard to Kill. I thought that was a pretty good one.
Of course.
But we're talking No Retreat, No Surrender here. Yes. Upon the release, the film received negative reviews. Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Focusing on the story, which many critics found too similar to the film The Karate Kid.
Of course, it's there.
I don't know if that's fair, but okay.
It is.
It makes it seem like they blatantly stole it, but honestly, I don't think... I mean, it's... similar in that they're both a karate movie, but
yeah, karate movies. You got a young, you know, American male. Well, Daniel LaRusso was actually Italian.
American males.
Yeah, but they're, you know, they're being taught by, you know, legendary Asian martial artists. One was alive, one was dead.
Well, they're both dead now.
Fighting bullies.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is like. Van Damme really didn't have that much involvement really in this movie. It was in the opening and the end, and that was pretty much it.
Oh no, yeah, he was the bookend of the movie.
Yeah. That's what's very interesting about it.
Technically, he wasn't supposed to be a part of that fight at the end. They just brought him in later as a surprise entrant.
He was the money in the bank cash in.
But also on a trivia, he had a car that was breaking down when he was filming the movie, and crew members had to push the car to have it work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was like, this is him starting out in Hollywood, you know, trying to make it big. And eventually he did. But, yeah.
I'm surprised that Van Damme just didn't, you know, throw a saddle on the fat guy in the movie and ride him like Boba Fett rode the Rancor. Tough crowd.
We'll get to that bully later if we ever get to them, because wow, that bully was something.
Yeah. Critical responses of this movie. Walter Goodman of the New York Times gave the film a negative review, writing that the story appeared to have been slapped together. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, it looked like it was just trying to get everything done on time, trying to get it out there. It kind of looked that way. Like, they couldn't have enough time to breathe and actually do something good with it.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of plot holes, or not, I wouldn't say plot holes, but just the story itself was really not structured well. There was times where I was confused as to what was going on, like the love interest. Kelly. When did they meet? When did they start feeling for each other? Like, like another moment was the lady you see in the beginning driving the car. We didn't know it was his mom until 2/3 into the film, where he goes, "I'll see you later, mom." And it's like, wait, that's his mom? He has a mom? Like, it's very clunky.
And that's another cliche that was from The Karate Kid that was put into this movie too. That LaRusso had a love interest, but that seemed like it was forced in this one.
Yeah, but usually in a lot of movies, you got to have like the subplots and whatnot. Usually a love interest. Titanic came out. There was a fucking it was a love story. It's about a ship that fucking sank, but they had to throw a love interest thing in there. So I can understand why they wanted to do it. It's just I think they should have hashed it out a lot more. It definitely was slapped together.
Well, if it was just about these guys and their ways of fighting and learning martial arts and everything, have that be that conflict, it would have been a much better, like, a little more of a better made movie than what happened, what we got back in 86. Or it was released in 85, but got released in 86 here in the States.
Yeah. Another thing I was very confused about with, like, the plot holes is, why was the fat dude always picking on RJ? There was no, you know, letting us know the reason behind all that. He just, you know, he's sitting there on his lawn. RJ's coming out with the skateboard. He grabs the hose, squirts him down, and then he's picking on him in the parking lot of Burger Time and whatnot.
There is a list of what things that were odd about this bully. Like, yeah, that's one of them. But him and his, you know, ways of eating the food and being a slob and everything. It's like, yeah, he's eating like a piece, he's a thing of cake with half of the box on it, too. It's like, there's a lot of awkward things with this character. And pretty much, yeah, it was all like a confusing mess with hit with this guy. Like, wow.
Yeah, when I'm sorry.
I was going to say, they never explained why the fat guy was having beef with Jason either. Like, I thought he didn't like him because he was a karate guy, you know, but they were both doing karate. So wouldn't you be like, oh, hey, you're into the same shit I'm into?
I think his beef stemmed because association with RJ, and then in the parking lot scene, you know, he got his ass whooped by him.
Yeah, but I, if I remember correctly, at first when they were moving in, he was the fat guy, that is, pronoun boy.
Yeah.
He was sitting on the lawn chair, and he was like, oh, look at this Bruce Lee look wannabe and stuff like that. And then it was RJ that showed up and then started to help, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he hasn't even met the guy, and how does he know that he's this Bruce Lee guy?
Yeah.
And he kept calling him Percy. Beat it, Percy. Percy. His name's Jason. Yeah. But beat it, Percy.
I just remember the first time, like when Dennis and I were watching this together, the first shot of him where he was leaned up against that car and he had the cake in one hand and a box of, was it Ding Dongs on the hood of the car? Ding Dongs.
Yep. The cake was in the box.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It wasn't like he carefully opened it. It looked like he had, like, fucking just ripped it right open and tore it like King Kong.
Like, yeah, oh, it's funny because he's fat or something. I don't know.
But it was funny because he's fat.
Because he's purposely a slob and he's eating the burgers and he had two parts of mustard on both sides of his face. It's like, wow, this guy's like a caricature of a overweight bully.
It was a live action Garbage Pail Kid.
Yeah. His facial structure too, just, yeah, it fit that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's just on his lawn. He just, you know, saying Clint Eastwood quotes like, go ahead, make my day. You know.
Here's my question about the fat guy. Like, he all right, so he tried to fit in, right? So he wanted everybody to be his friend other than those two guys. So he goes to Burger Time. He orders all that food for everybody. Obviously, it's well documented at this point because of, you know, his father getting on to him about being lazy, not washing the windows and stuff. So you know this guy's lazy. He doesn't work. He doesn't want to do anything. Where does he get this money to buy all these burgers at Burger Time? Did he steal daddy's credit card? Did he mow some lawns? What did he do to get this money?
But also, you know, he's also not really a bully if he's doing these nice things with his friends and everything. And picking on RJ for some reason.
You think it was racially motivated?
They didn't even say that. Maybe it's, or they could get hinting it, but it's not really explained.
What about you, DA? Yeah. You think it's racially motivated?
I didn't get that vibe, but it was just, I did like the fight scene in the beginning between RJ and Fatty McFat.
Jason, and those construction
workers were just like, oh, okay, well, we're going to watch this. Time for our union break. You can do it, Fatty.
And Jason, like, he can't help. He just tells him, "Beat it, fat boy." It's like, okay, that insult and everything, but well, you're coming across kind of like a little bit of a bully there too, putting him down.
Yeah. New kid coming into town and starting shit.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good plot hole. Like, how does he know this guy likes Bruce Lee? He must be psychic.
You know, in the description of this movie that I read at the beginning of the podcast here, fails to mention a key component to the plot of this movie. Because in the description, it just says that he uses lessons learned from Bruce, the spirit of Bruce Lee, against Soviet martial artist Ivan Krasinski. But one of the biggest key components of that is at the very, very beginning of the movie, the dojo is visited by members of the organized crime syndicate looking to take over all the dojos in the country. And Krasinski, played by Van Damme, he's not the boss. He's not the guy running it. He's the muscle. It's this like very skinny Paul Heyman-esque kind of guy that's just very slimy. He's snarky. He's just, he wants to go in and get a monopoly on everything. And that's like the starting point for everything. That's the inciting incident, if you will.
Is there a crime syndicate? Why are they specializing in pushing over people running martial arts dojos?
Right.
It's like, yeah, they didn't really explain that if they're drug dealers or mobsters, they just go around muscle people who run dojos.
And I got to say, if they got to have balls the size of mangoes, like if you're going to go around and try to take over businesses, taking over businesses that literally train people to whoop ass, you've got to have some confidence in your fighting ability. And all the eggs are put into one basket with Ivan Krasinski.
Oh, like this crew was like Vince McMahon trying to buy out the territory. He's just going up to everybody.
He's not a wrestling promoter.
No, I don't know what the thing is. I mean, maybe I missed it, but they didn't even describe what he wanted. It's just like he was going for the territories.
Like, yeah, well... Yeah, he's not a wrestling promoter. He's not some Don King guy. He's just like, he's just going around muscling people saying, join us, join our, crew. What kind of crew?
Well, he wanted the dojos because he wanted the money. It's all about the money.
Yeah, but he goes around like he's like this mobster, but it's not really explained.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no backstory behind it, like.
Yeah.
What's his motivation for? Is it just money? Was there something else? Like maybe over in his home country, he had a dojo, got taken over by the country, so he came over here to do the same thing. Like.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of messed up too. In the beginning, he breaks homeboy's leg, right at the very beginning.
Oh, let me talk about that. They broke his leg, but why is his leg arched up? And it looks like it wasn't broken.
Yeah.
Like, I think my leg is broken. Like, you think?
I was more concerned about the guy's broken leg being broken the entire freaking movie. Like, did it never heal? I mean, I'm not a doctor or anything, but I would think it'd be healed by then.
You know what it is? He saw the doctor at Cedars-Sinai that put the same cast on Bob Orton Jr.
Oh, with that fight, that was a really cool stunt, though, what Van Damme did when he leaped off that guy's knee and hit him square in the chest. You know, that was like multiple takes. He actually contacted his neck at one time.
Oof.
Yeah.
Roughed him up.
And so, like I said, the selling point of this movie is the fighting.
Yes.
And the fighting is freaking awesome just in terms of, scripting and directing actors to act. Yeah, those were the weaknesses of it.
DA, I know that was one thing you were excited about seeing, right? It was all the fighting.
Yeah, for sure. The fight scenes, I would say is probably some of the best fight scenes I've seen in any movie. But hands down in the top three. This puts every other movie's fight scene to shame. There are hardly any cuts, and it's I mean, there's hardly any cuts in the entire movie, but
just bad ones.
Yeah. Oh,
and the camera's not being sped up. These people are moving fast.
Yes.
Like, yeah, Van Damme is freaking fast in this.
Like the one guy in the Seattle dojo that was fighting Jason, there he was like, "You're our best fighter." That dude was lightning quick. He was like,
"Oh, was he the one that when he won a match, they slept on TV, and you could tell this TV it is imposed on it."
Like, Jeff, we're
like, I'm so positive.
Barely able to hear you there.
Oh,
there we go.
Can you hear me? I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
saying like you could tell that this was composite onto that little TV. If you've noticed that, he's raising up the trophy and they're watching him on TV. Do you remember that?
Did you just get flushed down the toilet or something? You sound far away.
Yeah, it sounds really weird.
Really? You can't. Oh, I'm sorry. Checking 1-2.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Oh man.
All right, let's do it again. I'm like, no retreat, no surrender. We're gonna have to cut.
I think his mic is surrendering.
But can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
It's surrendering, and his mouth is retreating from the mic. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, just roll
credits.
Yeah, mention that on your description of the podcast episode.
Okay.
That there were some audio issues with my microphone. Sorry about that. Because I don't know what happened.
We'll get a chance started. Jeff fucked up.
But no, what I was saying was when the guy won his match on the I think it was the MGM Grand. It said.
No, I think that's the guy that he ran the dojo. I think DA is talking about the black dude.
Oh, yeah. He's. I think that's the guy named Sugarfoot. If you've seen the credits.
Yes, okay. That's him.
Yeah, he's like a real life. He's from Canada. The real life kickboxing champion. Yeah, there's a lot of like real martial artists in this, and they move so fast.
Yeah, I just pulled up his stats here. His professional boxing record is. He had 10 wins and 4 losses. For his kickboxing record, he had 53 bouts with 50 wins, 1 loss, 2 draws.
Wow.
And 21 of those wins were by knockout.
He got knocked the fuck out at the end. Yeah. I know we're jumping around a little bit here, but holy shit. John Claude Van Damme. And then Fatty McFat throws in the towel. It's like, dude, it's over.
Yeah, he's already down.
He's already dead. They're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you know, when that happened, I told TA, I said, what is it with 80s films and Russians killing black guys? Tough crowd.
Jeff is taking your question seriously and trying to figure out, why did that happen?
Well, I'm actually going to talk about, that character RJ, he's trying to be like this. Yeah, this stereotypical character.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's into breakdancing and everything. And I actually
read in the moves.
I actually read in the trivia he didn't really know much about breakdancing behind the scenes.
It's kind of like two movies into one with all that stuff. It was like Electric Boogaloo.
I'm saying, like, why am I watching Breakin' 2? These couple are dressed like Turbo.
It's funny when SC came on. I told DA, I said, if you dig this, we gotta watch Rad.
Yes, I will watch that. I watched that movie with you. I mean, I've seen that movie a bunch of times.
Yeah, when I was younger, I seen it quite a bit. I haven't seen it in probably 10 years, but it's a good flick.
I'm still trying to get over when Jason and his family moved to Seattle. The first thing he does is go into the garage and break the shells. It's like, dude, you just got here and you're already tearing the place down. Like, what happened?
Or when him and RJ are in there and he swings that ball around the header, he just whacks him right in the face.
Just whacked without, like, he didn't flinch or anything. He just kept going. Like, all right, I guess that happened.
Well, there's also something I want to point out here with the location. Okay. It says that they moved. Yeah, they moved to Seattle, but some of the locations, it looks like Southern California.
Yeah, that was something BS.
Yeah, when they come pulling up to the house, I told DA, I said, "Look at all the oil stains on the ground. They probably shot this in like Wilmington or something."
Well, the only part where it's Seattle is when he visits Bruce Lee's grave.
Oh, and the shots, the B-roll of the Space Needle.
But
on different days. Like, there's one shot with the Space Needle. It's all hazy and misty. And then the next one, clear as fuck. And then the house is just, there's not a cloud in the sky.
That house is not a Seattle fucking location for sure. I know for a fact that was downtown L.A., man. That might have been a Downey or something.
That was another thing, like, I always thought, oh, there's no way I could tell the difference between shots. Like, in typical movies, like, you can't really tell. It's all consistently one shot. But in this one, it is clear as day that they did not film this at the same time. I don't know. But there was some great camera angles, like when Jason and RJ show up to the dojo in Seattle. And then they go into change, or RJ or Jason goes into change, and then the camera moves, and you see Porky Pig, like, with this shit-eating grin. They're like, "Yeah, I'm gonna fuck him up."
Yeah, and he wants to learn martial arts and everything, but then again, you know, he can't learn the proper use of maintaining a steady diet.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows how to use a fork and a spoon, let alone how to diet. I don't think I've ever... Everything that guy was eating in the entire movie was finger food. Or food you eat with your hands. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And when that tray of burgers showed up at burger time, I thought they were all for him.
Oh, my God.
And I'll just say this, that I'm probably going to bring this a bit of a downer. I actually looked up the guy. He actually passed away.
No shit. He ate all the burgers.
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. So.
Wow. Yeah, he was born in DA's least favorite town in the entire country, too.
What's that?
Talladega.
Oh, wow.
It's actually Chattanooga, but thanks for playing.
I thought you liked Chattanooga.
Not after that night.
That explains his southern accent.
Yeah. What was it? The guy in the bar that was picking on Jason's dad, who eventually, he got his ass whooped in the parking lot. But that dude looked like he could have been the father of, Mayor McCheese.
Oh, also, another thing. How does this guy know that the bartender is a karate guy?
Right.
And he's drunk off his ass, and he just says, "Hey, karate man, get me another beer."
I'm guessing it's like a small town. You know, you tell one person one thing, and it ends up in the everybody knows it in the town.
Seattle.
And when he was filling out his application, they're like, "Oh, why do you want to work in a bar? What experience have you had?" "Well, I used to run a dojo. Did karate.
He's the whoop ass.
Oh, you're perfect. Okay. You're perfect."
Now he's a bartender.
Well, apparently in that town, it's very quick to learn about people, because when Jason showed up to Kelly's birthday party, he had a pet for her. Like, they had to have known each other enough for him to give another life to her. You know, another fucking living being.
There's a lot of unexplained things that just seem like they got tacked together without any rhyme or reason.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say that they met in school, because there was no scenes where that guy went to school at all. Like, the only time an age is brought up, I think, is to say that the sister is 17.
Yeah. Oh, he went to school, okay. He went to the School of Hard Knocks. That's where he went to fucking school. The mean streets of Seattle.
I jokingly said, "Are they bringing a ghost of Bruce Lee into this?" Thinking that they wouldn't do it. There's no way. It's too embarrassing. Oh. And then they show up, and it's the worst Bruce Lee looking motherfucker I've ever seen in my entire life. He doesn't look nothing like Bruce Lee.
Hey, story behind that. I was about to say that that guy was the stand-in to the Bruce Lee unfinished movie Game of Death.
Really?
When they finished making it, they couldn't use Bruce Lee anymore because he passed away. Yeah.
They're going to prop him up with strings like a puppet and shit. Like, here you go, Bruce.
We can hurt Brucey.
Oh, shit.
They had a stand-in. And that guy played his stand-in in that movie.
So technically he is Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
By a technicality.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, that's... He became...
He's technically the biggest star in that film, right? Up to that point?
At that time, yeah. He probably had to have been the biggest name, right?
That's where all the budget went. That's where the mic budget went and the lighting budget.
I'm surprised they didn't like put like a blue hue around him, you know, like a force ghost. That wasn't a
thing. This was way after Star Wars. I would have thought that would have been right up everybody's alley.
Yeah.
But then they would be ripping off Star Wars. So we don't want to do that.
Yeah,
they're ripping off every other movie.
Right? It's this clear cut ripoff of the Karate Kid, I guess, right? The funny thing is, like D.A. mentioned, they didn't go to school. What was one of the biggest things about the Karate Kid was a lot of this took place at the school. They were students.
Yeah.
We got to see what it was like to be a teenager at that time in that movie. They really captured the essence of youth in the 80s. No Retreat, No Surrender, if you would have never had the parents involved, you would have never known, these teenagers or the young adults, you would have thought they were just men, you know?
Well, yeah, that's the one thing, too. These guys looked like they were really... They didn't look remotely like kids that go to high school. They looked like guys in their probably their mid 20s.
Yeah.
Fighting. Maybe the youngest one that looked young was RJ.
Yes.
He might have been a kid, but the other ones, these looked like grown ass dudes fighting.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly believe that if you put this movie on, not even in the beginning, just like in some random spot, and you show it to people, they'll think it's a porno. It just has that weird editing style of a porno where there's no cuts at all, and then all of a sudden there's a bunch of quick cuts.
The name of the movie kind of fits the bill, too. You imagine that if it's when it came out? Vivid Video presents No Retreat, No Surrender, starring Ginger Lynn and Paul Thomas. Tough crowd.
No, I've heard of Ginger Lynn. I was not born yesterday.
Okay.
I'm sure you have.
Ginger Lynn was one of my all-time favorite porn stars. You ever seen her in Bedtime Tales with Paul Thomas where she's the cheerleader? Never mind. We're talking No Retreat, No Surrender. The fight scenes were fantastic. There was a fat guy eating a bunch of burgers and shit.
I was about to say she was in that Metallica music video, Turn the Page.
Yes. Yeah, she was.
So, and she was also in, last thing maybe I saw her in was the movie 31. Uh-huh. That was a Rob Zombie movie.
A lot of porn stars from the 80s trying to do the crossover thing. Ginger Lynn was also in American Pie Bandcamp.
She was. I'm not going to reluctantly say.
Yeah, and then what's her name? Tracy Lords. She transitioned over to doing Crybaby and Zach and Mary, amongst other things.
And... but they were not in No Retreat, No Surrender.
No, but you know what? We should do a podcast about 80s porn someday.
Let's save that.
That's cinema.
All right, I'll start working on the research right now.
Hey, take your hands out of your pants. Place them on the table so we can see them. All right.
Yeah.
I got to say, in this movie, No Retreat, No Surrender, the character Kelly, her and her friends... That little birthday party that they had, in hindsight, maybe I probably shouldn't make any comments like this, but even though they were of age when they recorded, they were portraying those underage. So I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to get too crazy. They were hot as fuck. I know DA really liked that little skimpy bikini.
if it was any shorter, it'd be a belt.
They just didn't look remotely like high schoolers.
Oh, hell no.
At least not the high school I went to.
They looked like pros.
Well, you know,
bunch of feisty Sheilas.
Well, Ralph Macchio was 24 when he did the Karate Kid, so.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I was.
Yeah, but he was baby faced.
When I was,
he looked like it. Yeah.
For real, yeah, he did. He looked like he was 12. Recently when my girlfriend Crystal and I were watching because it was such a delay, she hadn't seen the new season of Cobra Kai. Well, I had pointed out to her, I said, do you know that the chick playing Daniel LaRusso's wife is like almost half his age? She's like 4 years older than us. Like she had to have been like 4 or 5 when Karate Kid came out.
Yeah, Ralph Macchio is now 60.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he looks great for his age, but yeah, he's playing somebody who's still a little bit younger.
Yeah, you know, he could be her dad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But
who's your dad?
He's still a baby face.
And what does he do?
But anywho, no retreat, no surrender.
Yes, let's get right back to that. I gotta say, you know what I really like is at the very end when Jean-Claude Van Damme's character Ivan, he whoops everyone's ass. And what really got me was when he got that one dude at the very end and he flipped him over the top rope and then he fell in between the ropes. He got tied up. I can't even describe it the right way, but DA, can you describe it any better than I could?
Well, like he was trying to go for that move for the tarantula, and then it's like in a blank check when they're in those balls like a hamster or something. It just he flipped, and then he got caught like a fly in a spider's nest, and he just kept getting pounded.
Wow, you just made me think you like the movie Blank Check.
That's a good movie.
I grew up on it.
There was a lot of fallacies in it, but it was a good movie.
Who doesn't like a garbage can filled with ice cream?
Yeah, and Karen Duffy? Come on, man.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, you don't kill people you don't know.
Bro, Randy! That's right. That's right. She was in Dumb and Dumber, the sidekick of the guy. Your favorite line, DA, say it again.
You don't kill people you don't know. That's our rule.
You know what other movie that guy was in that a lot of people don't realize? He was in Uncle Buck. He played the clown.
Oh,
I best remember him as the head of the, he was a producer in Ed Wood.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's one of those guys you probably wouldn't like recognize his name, but you know his face, and he's been
his voice.
Oh yeah, definitely. if I'm not mistaken, he was also in Goodfellas, wasn't he? Tough crowd. Let's go back to No Retreat, No Surrender.
I was just trying to like have us slowly go back to No Retreat, No Surrender.
That's right. If you get lost in the ring, go to a rest hold. No retreat, no surrender. We got RJ. We got Jason. We got the Ivan, the Russian, Krasinski. I like how they just said it. Just Ivan the Russian.
Oh, wait, hold on. Do you want me to go back to that then? Because that guy, since you mentioned him, uh-huh. He was in a movie called The Last Dragon, which we should talk about in the future.
You know, that's somewhat in the notes here that they had made comparisons to that as well.
Is that the one with Bruce Leroy?
It's a classic. I love that movie.
Yeah, right here it says, Time Out compared the film to The Last Dragon, Karate Kid, and Rocky IV, noting that it borrows heavily from those films and makes them look like masterpieces. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh,
that is Last Dragon is the one with Bruce Leroy and what was the heel's name? Show Enough.
There was the guy from that movie was he showed up at Millennium Pro Wrestling about 10 years ago. I was out there in Simi Valley and I can't remember which one it was. But there was a guy that was in that movie. I think it might have been the main star.
His name is. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, because I accidentally hit a button here. Sorry. This is a great podcast. Gosh, what was I? Oh yeah, he was on Up Up Down Down.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He surprised Rusev, who is now Miro.
Yes.
On an episode because he liked that movie, The Last Dragon.
We should add that to the list, DA.
I've seen The Last Dragon.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Of course. Sick.
All right, then I guess we won't add that to the list.
I mean, I'm all for watching it again. That's a classic. It's been a while, so I would definitely need a refresher if we're going to talk about it.
I think last time I saw that was probably the last time other than today that I saw No Retreat, No Surrender. It's been that long.
I know about 10 years for me.
His name is Ty Mock.
Yeah. I think he was the one that showed up to... Because there was a guy that wrestled for them that had a gimmick somewhat like what they would do in the movie. And they paid enough money. What's his name? The guy that ran the place. He had a lot of money. He was a cop on the side, you know, or that was his main job, his day job. He ran a wrestling promotion at night. So, you know, he had like a lot of money. And he used to shell out for some major buku stars to show up at MPW. And that was the month after I was there because Sunny was advertised for it, but then she couldn't show because she got arrested, which, by the way, she got arrested for the second time this year today. But that's other – I'll do that on a different podcast. But
another podcast, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's part of cinema. She was a cinema star. She did a movie for Vivid, so
– before we go back to No Retreat, No Surrender,
yes.
I would say probably the best part of that was the guy saying, "Watch the nails." If I've seen a review of it, and some people blurted out, and the guy kept telling her, "Watch the nails, watch the nails." She was like digging into his leg while he was.
You know, it was my favorite WWF superstar was Nails.
Nails? The fuck? Nails?
Anyway. Let's just save that for like a wrestling podcast, maybe, and go back to the... you didn't really... Okay, No Retreat, No Surrender. You didn't talk about the box office to this movie.
No.
I bet it made $2.
Well, what was the budget?
It was $400,000.
Wow.
400,000 and it made 10 times that amount at the box office. So it profited, and that's why they got sequels.
Surprise. They had that big of a budget. That granted, in the grand scheme of movies, it's not a big budget, but $400,000, you could do a lot, apparently.
And it introduced the world to Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yes. Yes, it did. Yeah, so box office, 4.7 million in U.S. and Canada.
So it was money. It profited.
And then, like we were saying earlier, it's part of a franchise. They did a part two and a part three. Part two. All right. So you said who was in part two that you said it was a major star in the '80s?
Cynthia Rothrock. Yeah, I'm shocked you've never heard of her.
It might be one of those situations where, like, I may not recognize the name, but if I saw her, I'd probably get it. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. China O'Brien. Yeah. I remember seeing the cover art for those movies a lot when I was a kid and go to the video store.
I mean, before there was a time when it was, you know, today we got ass-kicking women.
Yeah.
She was like the leader there, like her and Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, know, it says here like, she's got an eighth degree black belt and Tang Soo Do.
Yeah. She's the real deal.
But that's not all. She's got a black belt in Taekwondo, karate, Eagle Claw, not Eagle Fang, but Eagle Claw, and DA's favorite, Wushu, Northern Shaolin, And I know I'm going to fuck this name up. Pao Lum Tao Kung Fu. Maybe I didn't fuck it up. I sounded right.
Yeah. Well, no, because you're just listing off all these disciplines that she knows, these various forms of martial arts.
Yeah, no, I get that. I'm just talking about the pronunciation of it. I have no idea if I fucked it up or not.
I'm sure you're fine.
Yeah, you know, I don't read this out. I don't read it in my head before I read it out loud. You know, I'm pulling a KJ over here.
Oh, we're making this a fun, entertaining podcast. So,
hey, that's what we do here on Cinema Flair.
Add some humor and a little bit of flair. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait. What?
adding a little bit of like what he was saying.
All right.
Like he. Yeah.
I've got a question for DA because Jeff, I don't even have to ask you that. I don't have to ask you this question ever. I already know the answer. It's yes. It's a resounding yes to every fucking time I can ask this. But to the DA, I'm going to ask you this. Sticking with this martial arts theme, I think we should do a trilogy of these, right? We did Best of the Best. We're doing No Retreat, No Surrender now. I think a good movie that's an obscure movie that not a lot of people know about, but the three of us get together, watch this, discuss this to cap off a martial arts trilogy, kind of break out of the 80s a little bit too, because this came out in 1991. DA, have you ever seen The Perfect Weapon?
Oh, no.
You have not seen The Perfect Weapon. Okay. We are adding that to the list.
Hey, that guy, Jeff Speakman.
Yes. My brother Ryan had a big freaking poster for this movie on the wall in his bedroom. Growing up, I would always see that poster and I was just enthralled by it. And then like when we finally watched the movie, holy crap, man. That is a movie.
Oh, alrighty, pal.
Yeah, he was also in another one called Make the Straight Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he's been in a lot of other stuff. He hasn't really like reached the heights like, you know, like Van Damme or, you know, any of those action stars that really, you know, made it big.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff Speakman's got a 9th degree black belt in American Kenpo Karate and a 9th degree black belt in Tenshi Gojukai. That just sounds like it'll fuck you up trying to say it.
But yeah, he's an underrated figure and underrated action star. Just couldn't really, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's bring this to a close here for No Retreat, No Surrender. Any final thoughts on this? Jeff, we'll start with you, bro.
I would say, gosh, we should talk about, you know, how great the fight choreography was. It was a little kind of cartoony, but the fight scene between Jason and Ivan, it's like, that is some great stuff. It is like, it was building up to this great moment. And also, how about the song? Hold on to the vision in your eyes. Like, that's just a great, like, I'm talking about 80s montage music. Gosh, it was so great. Right?
Absolutely. 80s montage music. We could do a whole show on that.
Oh, yeah, of course. And one of those was going to obviously be Rocky.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Burning Heart.
Oh, yeah. But of course, I have the Tiger, you know, no brainer. But yeah. Final thoughts.
Thunder in your heart.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, like, there's no way out. Wait, there's no easy way out. That was from Rocky IV.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's some good ones. And another final thought, like, it is glorious and cheesy, and it's like a B-grade version of Karate Kid. And I'm going to give it, I'll rank it between the 10-star rating, 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10 there from Jeff. Very good. DA, any final thoughts for you, brother?
I got to agree with Jeff here that the fight scenes were definitely top notch. You know, I can't think of any film right now that the fight scenes were as good as they were in this film. Story or the story and the script definitely needed a lot of work. You know, the editing and the filming definitely, you know, there's some highlights and some lowlights. But with $400,000 budget to be able to do the things that they did, I got to tip my hat to them. That's pretty cool. I haven't made a movie, so I can't talk. But if I was to rate it, you know, as far as the action scenes go, I'd say definitely an 8 out of 10 just for the action scenes. But if we're talking about the story, that's probably going to be about a 3 out of 10. So what does that round out to? Maybe a 6 out of 10 overall.
Hey, you're the math guy, man.
Also, I just want to mention that the director, he went on to direct The Transporter
with yes.
Jason Statham. And he also did a movie called a video game adaptation called DOA.
Oh, which DA's favorite.
It had Eric Roberts in it too.
Fucking Eric Roberts.
Yes, he was in another fighting movie.
You know, Eric Roberts, that's real quick, just a little shout out to Eric Roberts. His work in this season of The Righteous Gemstones is just top notch. This guy is incredible, man. He has not lost his touch. He's got a wide range of acting skills that he could do the action movies and all that stuff. But then he can go into The Righteous Gemstones, which Danny McBride style humor, and fit right in. That's a hard thing to do.
Still need to watch that.
Phenomenal series. But, well, no, you're right. Yeah. The guy that directed this, he directed quite a few. Romeo Must Die, Kiss of the Dragon, The One, you know, Expendables. It's a bunch of really, really good movies.
He was a fight choreographer for those films. But he did a lot of Jet Li movies.
Yeah, it says here that he gained fame in America cinema beginning with 1998's Lethal Weapon 4.
We're talking about Corey Yin, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's the fight card, because we all know that was Richard Donner.
Oh,
good old Dick Donner.
It's funny. We keep saying this. Another theme of this episode here is we could do another podcast on that. We can do a month-long podcast on Dick Donner.
And, yeah, I was also gonna say about there was some, like, something very funny with some of the montages in the movie, No Retreat, No Surrender. Like the workout?
Yeah, they did a really good job with the montages in this one.
Yeah. Well,
how about when RJ was sitting on his lap?
Oh, jeez. I was like, what the heck is... And then they're in the booty shorts, too.
It's like, so he's eating like a icicle, something like ice cream pop... ice cream bar, and yeah.
And jamming to music. Who knows what kind of music he's listening to, but yeah, that was kind of awkward.
I know we're going to close this, but I just needed to say that.
He was probably listening to the music from the Blue Oyster Bar, QDA.
Is it Safer than Son? No, I'm kidding.
I'll see you soon. It's my time. Well, I'll tell you what time it is. It's time to wrap things up here on Cinema Flair, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff, any shout outs or any plugs?
Just if you can, I'm on a Twitter, Instagram, the Bold 180, Bold 182, the Bold 1 Movie Reviews, my podcast. The link is on my Twitter page. Listen to it. I just like to talk about movies, whatever I've seen. You know, they could be short, they could be long.
That's what she said.
Exactly. Follow me there.
This guy's the Rob Bruce of fucking movies.
Rest in peace, Rob.
Rest in peace, Rob. DA, any shout outs, any plugs?
I just want to plug two of my podcasts. The first one is Two Guys Drinking. find it anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Or if you like beer, do you like history? Then check out the beerhistorypodcast.com.
And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, check out Cinema Flare on social media, Twitter and Facebook at Cinema Flare, Instagram, CinemaFlare.com, on Twitch, twitch.tv/CinemaFlareLive, and our sister site, ringscoops.com, for all your pro wrestling needs. And you can go to the shop on ringscoops.com to find the Cinema Flare t-shirt up there on shop.ringscoops.com. On behalf of Jeff and on behalf of the DA, I'd like to thank y'all for tuning into the podcast here this week on Cinema Flare. I am Wade Needham saying until next time, rock on.